You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, January 31st, 2023. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Matthew Johnson, interim director of Beloved Community Ministries in Atlanta, Georgia, on the Cop City protests and the shooting of a protester. Also on the program today, two more cops suspended over Tyree Nichols' murder. Two EMTs, responders, also fired. Meanwhile, the initial police report found to be a pack of lies. Inflation cools. Smaller Fed interest rate expected tomorrow and then hopefully going forward. Capitol Hill, George Santos stepping down from his committees, giving 110%, in his words. That's in the wake of a poll that says 78% of his constituents want him gone. But to be fair, that is less than 110%. So. U.S. to end public health emergency for COVID in May. That's going to shift testing, vaccine, and treatment costs to the public. Manhattan DA present Trump hush money case to a grand jury. School officials in two Florida counties have told their schools and their teachers to hide their books in wake of Florida's new book censorship laws. Biden administration to shore up ACA contraceptive mandate. House Democrats call on the Biden administration to suspend U.S. security assistance to Peru in response to its repression of anti-government protests. And Matt and Marjorie Schlaps?
Mercedes.
They've been booted from Fox News because of these completely
cancel culture.
Totally substantiated charges against cancel culture. There it is. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Hello, folks. Welcome to the program. It is, what do you call it?
Tuesday.
And Emma Vigeland's here. Going to pop her up or she... hiding?
Yeah.
Hiding there right over there. There she is. Okay.
Hiding in plain
sight.
Hi,
Emma.
Hi.
Got a lot to get to today. I pre-taped this interview with Matthew Johnson on Friday. That was, I think in that afternoon, was the announcement that Brian Kemp was going to call up 1,000 National Guardsmen to deal with the protesters in who are protesting in this area where they're going to build this cop city. In fact, Bradley, if you can get the there was a clip from the Daily Show about Cop City. It's about 2 minutes long. I think we talked about maybe playing that beforehand when we come back before we go to the break. So why don't we do that if you can pull that up? But in the meantime, the right is still trying to explain away the horror that we saw in that beating murder, I don't know what else to call it, of Tyree and Nichols. The five cops have been charged with second-degree murder. The right wing is just desperately trying to create some type of response that has nothing to do with the structural problems of policing in this country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is their mental health for school shootings.
Yeah,
exactly.
To talk about.
And they're trying desperately to find one. They think they have a hook because both Tucker Carlson and Tim Pool, more or less, are hanging their hats on this. It's a bizarre, not even half truth, but they're hoping that it's going to work for them because there's obviously massive pressure to do something about this. And had Democrats not sort of abandoned this out of some fake belief that it was going to hurt them at the polls, it's quite clear that in retrospect, none of this did. In fact, to the extent that their talk about and their concern about crime and whatnot, a lot of people think that their overhyping of crime and their promotion of more policing ended up losing a couple of House seats in New York. Here is Tucker Carlson. Try and guess what he's going to blame the beating of Tyre Nichols on in Memphis.
The race riots of 2020, of course, were never about George Floyd. Obviously, that's why there are no statues of him in American cities. They were about changing the country forever. And the first step, of course, was defunding police departments across the country and forcing them to lower their standards to attract unqualified applicants, hiring.
Pause it for a second. Pause it. The sleight of hand, I mean, it's pretty quick.
Insane.
Mm-hmm.
There is nothing about defunding the police that has to do with paying police less. It has to do with paying less people to be police. And in fact, if anything, there's an argument you'd be able to pay them more. If you had less police, you'd be able to pay them more. You'd be able to have people who are more highly trained with far less to do, use some of that money that is being used for people who go into theoretically dangerous situations, spend that money on other people who have other types of training to deal with things like, I don't know, driving violations or dealing with mental health issues. So, in fact, that is just the first of the lies. But
See one flyer in front of Barclays Center during a defund protest that said, "I want cops to be economically anxious on top of everything else." But that was
exactly. I mean, that would be a cherry on top. But
that's not what defund the police means. It doesn't mean 25% pay cut for the existing.
Now they have to
cop.
Worry about how they're going to make ends meet.
But this is the way that you bend that narrative. And he goes through it pretty quick. So just go back like 10 seconds and you'll hear him go blow through that little complete lie.
Police departments across the country and forcing them to lower their standards to attract unqualified applicants, hiring officers based on skin color rather than integrity or skill or self-control, all in the name of equity. Now, does that result in better policing? Well, what happened in Memphis a few weeks ago is one indicator. At least two of the five officers who apparently beat Tyre Nichols to death were hired under lax diversity-driven standards. They're affirmative action hires. And yet, instead of admitting that, and it's true, the media are diverting attention from this fact by accusing these five officers, who are all black, of somehow being white supremacists.
Okay, pause it. No one is calling them white supremacists. Another sleight of hand there. They're saying they're a part of a structurally racist institution. Institutions can be racist, targeting racist and creating racist outcomes. It doesn't have to be individuals. But also, the way he just moves past that three out of those five were not hired after the George Floyd protests. And there's doesn't seem to be any... we can get into the details of what he's claiming is an affirmative action program, but that's not what it is. They eliminated requirements for certain college credits in 2018, and then in 2020, two of those officers were hired. So what is that an affirmative action program? That seems like a loose definition of that.
He's also, and again, this is also a way of hiding the structural problem that exists there. Certainly, you know, you had in concentration camps, you had some Jews who were guards, capos. That doesn't mean that they're there and that you could say like, well, how can this,
this
concentration camp be anti-Semitic? There are some of the guards are Jewish. So Yeah, no.
That's practical.
This is Tucker Carlson's job. It is to make sure that there is no structural change to the institutions that are racist in practice.
Once again, a young black man's death at the hands of police is sparking demands for change regarding police brutality and systemic racism in America.
This is about structural racism. It's about white supremacy, but it's also about a system of toxic masculinity, patriarchy, and an overall system of oppression.
So it is nonsense that black and brown officers have not been part of the problem of systemic racism and policing.
Yes, racism, and the role it almost certainly played in the death of Tyree Nichols in Memphis. The idea that black and brown people can't internalize white supremacist tropes, narratives, ways of seeing the world is something that I, as a brown man, am telling you is just patently untrue.
Okay. So TV anchors who went to Princeton and live in overwhelmingly white neighborhoods are telling you that a killing perpetrated by five black men against a black man is the fault of white people. Okay. Meanwhile, in New York, a female agitator...
And to be clear, he also refuses to say five cops. It is five cops that killed him.
Mm. Yeah.
Continue.
Just punched two police officers, and the DA in Manhattan, Alvin Bragg, released the attacker from jail without bail. So you thought the whole defund the police thing had stopped? Actually, it's accelerated. Heather McDonald knows a lot about it.
Right. Search Heather McDonald racism.
Yeah.
Just if you want
some
homework.
She knows a lot
tonight.
About racism, indeed.
This was his, I don't know if you can see this, this was his graphic on...
Antifa reactivated.
Antifa reactivated on Friday. None of that happened. So he's going to go to this one instance in New York. That's what it is. Great. Yeah.
It really is amazing to watch this guy night in, night out. It's stunning to imagine how grotesque he is.
Yeah.
It really is amazing to me.
I think like the there's one thing missing from like the MSNBC analysis of it that I think like the right is keen off of, which is like there's no discussion of political economy in this, which is also like where a lot of the racism comes from. So like I fully like buy what Mehdi's saying about like people of color can internalize racist narratives. But like the bigger problem is, why is that community so underinvested in the first place that we're creating like special squads to go in of, you know, people to like basically continue to keep them in line? Like
exactly.
That's the larger point that I feel like, I mean, that's like the mainstream media isn't really going to touch on that. So like we get in this discussion about just like, you know, racism.
Mehdi's point is correct, and we've had guests on who have written about this dynamic where black and brown people internalize these messages, and even if it's like to the extent of like, you know, a kid on an airplane thinking a black kid on the airplane looking around at black people and thinking that maybe the chances of them being criminal are more than the white people, because this is what they have been educated. Mm-hmm. Our society has taught them. But yes, the real point here is that we have structured society in such a way that we are hiring, whether it's these special forces or creating this dynamic between the police, and these guys are policemen first. A dynamic between a police and people who live communities of color, if you want to call it, or just black people, brown people in general. And their job is to go and essentially discipline these mm-hmm. people. And, if it was to distill down, it would be primarily like your job is to, punish people living in low income neighborhoods.
That was this exact unit's role. I mean, this hotspot policing is a way that. There's this push, and Hochul's doing it in New York. The American Prospect just wrote about it, to do smart policing in certain neighborhoods, to tweak it and have hotspot squads like the Scorpion unit that target high crime areas, which is essentially poorer areas. And these are the results that are going to continue to happen if that's the case, unless there's actually community investment, not just polishing off a turd and saying that it's a new way to police, more high tech or something like that, more targeted. It's about changing the structure of policing and then also investing in communities. There's no shortcut.
There's also a big push to replace the sort of ability to intervene in people's lives that is going away through the loss of the drug war. So you can have things like we do have a smart machine that says the cop, the cop can actually go up and tell you to like turn out your pockets.
Right.
Yep. We will get to the interview with Matthew Johnson, interim director of Beloved Community Ministries, about what's going on Cop City in just a moment. A couple words from our sponsors. You heard me talk about ZBiotics. I feel like everybody in the office has tried it. I got myself a 12-pack before I went on that cruise because I knew there would be days where I'm going to be drinking. Sometimes more than normal for me, but even, you know, I'm getting older and I feel it the next day. ZBiotics, and I always thought it was the dehydration that gave you, like, made you feel, you know, not so great the next day. Apparently, what it really is a byproduct of alcohol that gets released in your gut in response to alcohol, and that's what gives you the worst of the worst the next day. Well, ZBiotics breaks down that alcohol byproduct, and essentially what you do is you take you drink one of these. They're tiny bottles like that big, and you drink it before you have any alcohol that night. Doesn't matter if you're having one drink. It doesn't matter if you're having multiple drinks. You should drink responsibly. Get a decent night's sleep, and then the next day you're feeling much better. You want to do work, you do work. You want to work out, you can work out. There's nothing worse, and it gets worse when you get older too. I'll tell you that right now. But there's nothing worse than like having a day wasted or half a day wasted because the night before you had one or two drinks. Like I said, I used this quite a bit on the cruise. And it was smart. It was one of the smartest things I've ever done, frankly. Get 15% off your first order of ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic by clicking the link in the description box. Use my code MAJORITY at checkout. Go to ZBiotics.com/majority. Get 15% off your first order. If you check the... the Super Bowl's around the corner. I'm sure, Emma, maybe you might be having a beverage during that time. Great time to pick it up.
Likely.
If you order now, you'll get it in plenty of time before the Super Bowl. ZBiotics.com/majority. Get 15% off your first order. We will have the link in the podcast and YouTube descriptions. Also, I think it was somebody announced this the other day, and I knew about it beforehand. Not because I have any special, but apparently they waited to release that information more publicly. But there was a Twitter hack. People had their passwords and emails leaked from Twitter, I don't know, a couple months ago. And I got a notice when I searched on via Aura, sponsoring the program today, that password and email combination had been compromised. And so I basically went and changed all my passwords there. And of course, Twitter's so messed up now that it takes like 14 times to log in because they keep sending the wrong code. But
it should be faster to refresh than ever.
But that's not Aura's problem. Aura basically, let me know. I should switch my email password combos if I'm using that combination. And Aura is basically an all-in-one package app to keep you safe online. It protects you from scammers and hackers because, like I said, it scans the dark web. That's where criminals sell stolen information. It looks for your emails, passwords, social security numbers, lets you know fast if they find anything, to help you fight back against those websites that make your personal information public by sending automatic removal requests. That helps reduce robocalls, keeps you your OPSEC good. Aura helps you, gives you real-time reports on if somebody's trying to open a loan or a bank account or credit card in your name. I found that out, and it was successful when I opened up an account for my daughter. I still ended up keeping the account for her, but Aura had it right. I should have never opened that in the first place, but that's not. their VPN allows you to stay anonymous online by keeping your browsing history and your personal information safe and encrypted. They protect your devices from viruses, malware, spyware, so bad guys can't break in. It even helps you manage what your kids do with their devices. You can restrict their apps. You can set screen time limits. You can set focus times. And they have a password manager, which lets you store and access your online passwords securely and conveniently. Like I say, you may have an app that does one of these things. This, you can get it all done. You don't have to buy 7 different apps. Let Aura do the hard work of keeping you safe online. If you sign up right now, Aura is going to give you a 2-week free trial with my link. You're going to be shocked at how much your private information Aura finds exposed over those 2 weeks. Go to aura.com/majority. Start your free trial. AURA.com, aura.com/majority. Start your free trial. Again, links in the podcast and YouTube descriptions. And lastly, I haven't stopped talking about this stuff over the past like month. I don't know why it's so such a revelation to me, but the best tasting honey on the planet apparently comes from New Zealand. They have a specific tree there, the Manuka tree, tea tree. And it essentially makes a super honey that is unlike anything you have tasted before. I swear to you. It is Manukora has mastered the texture of this honey through their ethical beekeeping practices that keep it 100% raw. It's a super honey. It has like these unique antioxidants and prebiotics. It's also a natural antibacterial. It has a compound called MGO that only comes from the nectar of this tea tree. It contains nutrients to support optimal immune and digestive health. But the bottom line is, it is the best tasting honey I've ever had in my entire life.
And I have said this before. A sweet fix, but it's good for you. I mean, it's got all the nutrients.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's not too sweet. That's the thing about it, is that it is right. Like, it is...
We need a new language to describe the exact...
Honestly, this is not... It's like almost like not honey. It's so... It is a different thing. It is... It's
the
like...
Nectar
it's
of
like
the gods.
Sort of caramely. Honestly, it's delicious. You should check this out, honestly. You can take a spoonful, like I do on occasion, but you put it your tea, your coffee... Put it on your toast, your pancakes, your yogurt, whatever, salad dressing, ice cream. Manukora's super honey is available in a range of easy to formats. They have squeeze bottles, they have compostable honey stick packs, so you can eat it straight. You add it to your favorite food or beverage. If you head to manukora.com/majority, you're going to get a free pack of honey sticks with your order. That's a $15 value. All you got to do is go to manukora.com/majority. You will automatically be eligible for that free pack of honey sticks with the order. It's called Honey with Superpowers for good reason. Get on it and try it. It's creamy and caramelly, and you are not going to really ever want a different honey after you've tried this. Once you go Manukora, you don't go back for something other.
Manabaca.
Yeah. Okay. Let's play this. Let's play this clip of the Daily Show Cop City interview, because it just basically gives you a good example of what's going on out there, give you a sense, and then we'll talk to Matthew Johnson, interim director of Beloved Community Ministries.
Two forest defenders who were going to give me a tour of the. Wait. Who the hell is this?
I think that's the police rolling up.
Yeah.
Because we're trying to obstruct their project.
Greengrass just took off. Greengrass don't f*** with the police. I understand. It's a black thing.
Yeah, let's go this way.
I'd rather take my chance with the Georgia Ewoks than the cops. So I followed Greengrass and Sabo into the woods.
So I just got here and the police just ran us into the forest. Is that normal?
Yes.
Yeah.
They come Monday through Friday. Just to terrorize us like police do.
Some of the forest defenders have a $25,000 bounty on their head. so they mask up to disguise their identity. And some are even taking a cue from old school T-Pain.
This is a plantation historically and an ex-prison farm.
I gotta be honest. I wish I had an auto-tune I could speak in, because you just made prison farm industrial complex sound so melodic.
They led me to the living room, one of their encampments, with kind of an A24 horror film vibe.
Press in the living room!
Yeah, don't just say press. You got to say Roy Wood Jr. You know him from Def Comedy Jam.
HBO.
And he's one of the best
Def Comedy Jam
comedians to do it.
This living room is used as our community function.
Hey, bingo. Y'all got bingo night?
Yeah.
Where's the Molotov cocktail station? Where's the gun training station?
The majority of us just want to live in peace with each other.
We work here on ourselves, and we do yoga, and we meditate, get massages here.
But y'all get massages? You do yoga, meditate, stretch, and deal with your inner, like therapy.
Yeah.
Has that had any type of effect on stopping Cop City from coming?
Yeah, their construction only gotten like 2 days in the past year, and one of the primary construction firms dropped out.
According to leaked documents, the Cop City building plan is months behind schedule. This crunchy granola shit seems to be working, but forest defenders say law enforcement has stepped up raids on their camps, so they built barricades, and they avoid police by living in tree houses.
So that's basically the situation of the protesters there. And things have obviously escalated since that Daily Show segment.
Probably because the cops don't want to let that, like seeing mm-hmm. that lesson get sent and said, like, that might work. That's when they really got to step up the, you know, suppression.
Right. And it's also much harder when these protests go nationally. They want to get on this before more people head down there. When you hear about this, it's also nuts that we just haven't heard about it in other contexts, that the Daily Show is, mm-hmm. on it more than most of the mainstream news. All right, we're going to take a quick break. This is a pre-tape I did with Matthew Johnson, interim director of Beloved Community Ministries down in Atlanta. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Joining me now, Matthew Johnson. He is the interim director of Beloved Community Ministries. Down in the Atlanta area. Matthew, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, sir.
Why don't we start just with, for folks who are just, I think, hearing about Cop City, explain to us what Cop City is. This has been something that has basically been in the works for about 2.5 years, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe more than that, but give us a sense of what Cop City hopes to be, I guess.
Right. This was a pass-through and a middle-of-the-night deal that even our city council did not know about in the early spring of 2021. Only because of the work of activists was this brought to the fore. This was done by Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms, while our current Mayor Andre Dickens was still on the city council, that it was approved to use this land that had been a part of the city's master plan for parks in 2017 to instead be used as what would be the largest militarized police training facility in the country. The two largest police departments in the United States are the LAPD and the NYPD. This will be 3 times the size of the LAPD's training facility. It will be 4 times the size of NYPD's training facility. Meanwhile, Atlanta has about the 19th largest police force in the country. Atlanta is already the most surveilled city in the United States since Operation Shield was implemented in 2017, which was also done by the Atlanta Police Foundation. This cannot be separated from the fact that Atlanta is the largest or the most Black large metropolitan area in the United States, where we also hold the record for the largest racial income disparity. For every $1 of the median household income for Black families, it is $3 for the white median household income. Despite the fact that Atlanta is touted as some type of black mecca, African Americans have a 5% chance of making it outside of poverty in the Atlanta area. What we're actually seeing is a black political class and a black upper class that has continually sold out the interests of the black working class for their own benefit. And also, the thing to note is that Atlanta holds the, essentially, so Georgia holds what I think the ranking of 6 for Fortune 500 companies, and you have many more moving in. You've probably heard about it more so in rap songs than anything else. Bankhead Highway is having 90 acres taken out to be Microsoft's headquarters. Meanwhile, there's no affordable housing, and people are being continually pushed out. So what we're seeing is that this is a confluence of factors that are probably far more impactful on the crime rate than anything else. And we've had a rising murder rate, although over the past 3 years, there's been a $32 million increase in the police budget. So it's not really keeping us safer, but it's really clearly protecting private interests. And so now let's bring this all together, right? So now there was this idea to build the militarized police training facility that we call Cop City that will be built in an area that's 80% black that already has significant flooding issues. Sewage from the Atlanta DeKalb water system floods the South River every time there's a tenth of an inch of rain. And the Clean Water Act has an exemption where they don't have any timeline they're held to clean this water supply. In South DeKalb, where it's 80%. However, North DeKalb, they're held to actual standards of when they have to clean the water. And this is already being litigated. Meanwhile, we're about to have more development, more areas paved, so more flooding, in a place that's already had a significantly poisoned water area, in a place that was the site of the Atlanta prison farm that used to be a plantation, right, before Native Americans were forcibly pushed off of the land.
Right.
So what we have is an exploitation of land at the expense of black people that will further police violence. So it's a confluence of whether you're looking at environmental racism, police brutality, I mean, whether you're looking at, you know, the racial wealth inequality, it's all happening right here. And you're having a forest movement and a forest protection movement right next to a major city, which essentially never happens.
Right.
So that's why this thing is blowing up. Sorry, I might have been running.
No. I mean, I think this is important context, because when we talk about why you would build a nearly 400 acre facility that it purports to create its own urban environment, where you're literally training officers, cops, for warfare, when you hear the context in terms of the wealth inequality and the dispossession of political power that the black community has is dealing with in Atlanta, it's not that far of a leap to understand why the city will be looking to create essentially a force to control people in an urban environment. I mean, this is, you know, this is, there's you really have two ways, I guess, maybe there's more, but then they're not necessarily, and I don't think that they're as viable of dealing with this type of inequality, this level of poverty in instances, and this lack of a mobility. One is to address those issues directly. The other is to make sure that you've created some type of mechanism to control people who have to deal with that inequality. And it seems they've gone for the latter. And all right, so let's talk about, we are recording on Friday. The governor of Georgia has just declared a state of emergency to bring in 1,000 National Guardsmen, presumably to do what ultimately they're going to be training a bunch of police to do, which is to control people in the community and prevent them from having any type of say in this. Like you said, 17 hours of debate, and suddenly 400 acres that were designated for a more community-oriented purposes turn into a police training facility. And this is also coming in the wake of the police killing of someone who went by the name of Tor Teguida. Can you give us, before we get there, tell us what the community has been doing. I know that the beloved of community ministries have been involved in this, that the community movement builders have been involved in this, that they there's been a coalition to form Stop Cop City, and you know, in conjunction with Defend Atlanta Force. Tell us about the resistance that has grown up over the past almost 2 years now to this plan.
Well, yes. One thing that I always like to distinguish about, for instance, Stop Cop City or Defend the Atlanta Forest, it's often thought of as an organization in the media. And I think that's very important for us to disambiguate, because it's more so a political stance or a movement, right? So it would be akin to saying that somebody is a member of pro-choice, right?
Right.
It's okay. More so like a why. It's like, we're all a part of this effort to stop Cop City and defend the Atlanta Forest. And that's important because the way in which the police and federal agents and also the GBI have been moving has been threatening anybody that's associated with the movement as a part of a domestic terrorist network, right? So it's very important to note that this is not an organization, because they're trying to essentially like create connections that aren't there. This has been a decentralized and autonomous movement. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, and to be clear, I just want people to understand that that is not a theoretical situation. There have been 18 people who have been now charged with being domestic terrorists for supposedly belonging to a so-called domestic terrorist group, when in fact what we're talking about is really just people who are on a side of an issue that exists.
Yeah, you can't make this stuff up. Good old Georgia. Nevertheless, here we are. And what's happening now is I think that they've been losing in a lot of ways, and they're starting to show it. Just to give a little bit of context, this has been a decentralized and autonomous movement from the very beginning. Now, mind you, before any of this has happened, we have canvassed the neighborhood. We have been petitioning elected officials in DeKalb County, unincorporated DeKalb, where this land actually is, as well as in the city of Atlanta. There was 17 hours, a record amount of public comment, where 70% of it was against Cop City. However, it was almost an inverse correlation with the votes of the city council, where 10 out of 14, about 70%, voted for Cop City. This goes back to a Princeton study in 2016 that established that there's virtually no correlation between public opinion and legislation. In fact, that study also found that about 90% of us have virtually no say in our government, right? So we're looking at, once again, these issues of wealth and influence in the halls of power. So we've been going through, you know, all of these channels. People have been doing tons of protests, marches, everything like that. And then perhaps there's been a little bit of trickery, right? You've had some instances of perhaps equipment being vandalized or things like that. And like, let's be frank, if we're looking at this empirically, these uses of force have been the only thing that have slowed this project down, and people sitting in trees. Now, just to note, on December 15th, people were pepper sprayed, shot with rubber bullets, and forcibly taken out of trees to then be charged with domestic terrorism, right? And to be quite frank with you, I believe that people being forcibly yanked out of trees and being charged with domestic terrorism just for holding a certain issue, or people that were being yanked out of a parking lot and then charged with domestic terrorism, is much more in line with the definition of terrorism by threatening people for taking a political stance than the people that are actually sitting in the trees minding their own business, right? So we're just seeing the asymmetry of who's allowed to make these calls. And so we're just seeing immense abuses of power at the same time that, I mean, let's be clear, They are showing you right now what they plan on doing with this facility, right? They're using overwhelming force to attack people, and there's not really one precedent of a police officer being hurt throughout this entire ordeal up until these very questionable circumstances around Tortuguita's death. God bless them. And then also, like, we have to keep in mind that especially, like, as we've moved forward with this movement and gained ground, the violence and the harassment has had an uptick.
Right.
And then also with that, they've essentially indiscriminately applied these charges to everybody. So what we have is significant abuses of force and indiscriminate charges, right, against people for virtually having some association with a political position. This is what happens in fascism. So, like, for us to, like, have this, like, some notion that somehow they're going to completely flip the script and then use this facility to make police nicer, I mean, it's such a farce. But these are the things that even liberal politicians will try to convince themselves of. And it's never true.
You know, it's what is fascinating about what we're watching. Well, there's many things, and I do want to get to Tortuguita's killing, which, you know, conveniently was not on body cam, although there were cams there. This dynamic of peaceful protests that are taking place, really no threat to any living human being, anyways, and the force that is being brought out, and it is sort of, there is an irony that this force is being used to essentially develop a facility to train forces like this and presumably do the similar thing.
I'm telling you exactly what they're doing.
And the classification of domestic terrorists who are engaged in this, I remember, and if I'm not mistaken, it was in Georgia. That in the mid aughts, there were vegans who were protesting a honey baked ham facility, and they were labeled by the Department of Homeland Security as domestic terrorists. And it's as if we're watching, like, you know, these things that were gamed out for vegans, and particularly, you know, the fact is, almost 20 years ago, the idea of vegans was, there were vegetarians, there was no groundswell. It was not a mainstream thing to be a vegan necessarily at that time. And the idea that was almost like a dry run, and we're going to take that playbook and we're going to impose it on people who are literally just camping in the woods. I watched a clip from The Daily Show of like a visit to the encampment, and it was, there's bingo night, there's people camping out. I mean, I've been to more threatening, you know, RV stops, frankly, in the past. And to mobilize 1,000 National Guardsmen just gives you an example, a taste of what's going on here. So explain the circumstances in which one of these protesters, Tortuguita, was killed by police in a raid on this camp.
Yes. Well, I think there's a couple of things that have to be noted about that instance. First, we have the issue of the inconsistency within perhaps 2 hours of the murder. One, we don't even know if Tortuguita could have been saved. There was never a chance. There was never a shot. Meanwhile, the entire highway was shut down to get this Georgia State Trooper to the hospital. So we already have a lack of clarity there. Initially, it was said that folks were ambushed by this person and then they shot. Within 2 hours, the narrative changed to this person being approached in a tent in shooting. I don't know how you ambush someone while you're in a tent.
Right.
It doesn't add up. Then, in the initial items that were collected at the crime scene, there was no gun. Then, I guess some folks backtrack, maybe produce a registration that then comes up with the gun. Now, let's also keep something in mind. We do have precedent of the police pointing firearms at protesters and even using rubber bullets. So there are significant, you know, threats to folks' lives that have already been out there and pointed weapons and weapons that were fired. So, like, if we live in a society where people can constantly make excuses for police officers that have very specialized training to handle crisis situations, to shoot kids, then I also think that there are some circumstances where someone who has a gun may adequately feel fear for their life and shoot back. Like, this is, and, you know, these are the things that hit people viscerally and sound very strange. But, like, let's be very clear that somebody can feel in fear of their life and be wrongfully targeted by police and perhaps shoot a shot. And I don't think that, I'm not going to get into the game where we just immediately dismiss somebody as bad because they defended themselves when the legitimate moral authority is certainly not in the hands of the police in so many of these circumstances where there are always shifting narratives. So the evidence around Tortuguita's murder is already very dicey. And I'm also not going to condemn them if they defended themselves.
And explain to me what has come out in terms of, like, the body cam footage, because there's supposedly some footage that existed, but not with the people, not with the cops who approached the tent.
Well, yeah, it's all quite dicey, right? You had several different people from different departments and entities that were in the woods that day, besides Georgia State Patrol. Georgia State Patrol has been under significant scrutiny for years because of their unwillingness to wear body cameras. And there have already been instances where they have shot people out of frame with no context and there's no explanation. In many cases, where no one else fired shot. So this has been an issue of contention where they will not wear them. And they
coincidentally were the ones who were, I guess, like you could say, theoretically on the front lines. They were closest to the incident
Highway Patrol. Why are they in the forest?
Right.
We already have people with SWAT and militarized gear and camo. Like, I mean, there's no precedent of any police being attacked, but they had a huge bomb squad RV out there. I mean, I couldn't exaggerate how much militarized equipment they had around the forest in the past 8 weeks, and it's only expanding. Why do police need tanks? Like, what credible threat is there, like, in our population that would require that of police? It's too dicey. We're treating policing in this country as if it's some type of video game, constantly making, like, clear villains out of anybody that is pushing back against the will of a state that's becoming more paranoid and more dangerous, and killing people at will and then making excuses for it.
What? How many people now were living in the forest as a means of protecting the property from being developed, and how many are there now? Like, give me a sense of what's happening in the wake of this killing. And now, I guess, you know, I guess it remains to be seen what the response is going to be to the state of emergency that's been called and the mobilization of 1,000 troops. I mean, it's just it's nuts to me. They're obviously trying to bring in sort of, you know, this is a almost a shock and awe campaign, as it were. What is the state of the protests that are going on to the extent that you can? I imagine, like, you know,
I can't. I was going to tell you, I can't answer the first part of that question. And then also, I really can't answer the second part of that question, because here is the thing, right? Generally, people ask protesters how they are going to respond But quite frankly, we never really dictate those terms because it's the state that's using the violence. Right. And I'm not going to condemn people for defending themselves. I'm not going to do it. And I mean, folks have just been so heavy-handed. And I think that people have the right to protest this encampment. We went through all like legal channels and discourse. And if we have any value in civil disobedience and human life, we would not expect that of people. Because what we have seen empirically is that all of these legal channels that were laid out for us have not worked. And then to ask people to be silently mowed down and treated as if they are nothing and if their humanity does not matter, I'm not going to do it. I have an anti-violent stance, not a non-violent stance, when people are forced with continued violence and force.
What my understanding is that these 380, 400 acres or so, somewhere around there, is in a sort of almost like a quasi no man's land in terms of jurisdiction, where it's as far as I can gather, there is some like sort of like it is in a weird sort of place jurisdictionally. And so once the city council refuses to basically, really have a legitimate process, 17 hours seems like a really truncated process. And particularly when it's hard to understand what the point of a public comment period is for when the public comments are overwhelmingly against it, and there's no response to that. Are there other avenues in which, on a political sense, for people who aren't there directly engaged in the protest, are there other avenues in which there can be a political address to this? And where would they be because of those jurisdictional questions?
It's all very dicey, to be honest with you. The Atlanta is technically an unincorporated DeKalb, but it's owned by the city of Atlanta. In terms of getting the approvals for the land disturbance permit, I think that is in the hands of DeKalb County in terms of who owns it and who could rescind the lease. That is the Atlanta City Council. So both of these entities should be held accountable. Meanwhile, it's already in court. Because you also have a part where we should not let this individual Ryan Millsap off the hook, because essentially he mowed down tons of land that he owned, that he said that he did assessments on in order to properly build on. Then he destroyed the land, realized that it was quasi-swamp land and he couldn't build on it effectively, and then the city moved to swap that 40 acres with him to remove the public park that's, tangential to the Atlanta prison farm, right? And this is where there have been a lot of raids and attacks on individuals. And then they've been called, or they've had false charges placed against them. So you have like lots of weird land issues, and the different municipal, state, county entities being in bed with corporate interests. So there's tons of weird that's happening here. Where it doesn't seem like the will of people is being represented at all. And there are multiple entities that should be held accountable for that. And while we're on the subject of land, let's not forget that this land is tied to the South River that already has significant issues with flooding. Now you're going to pave upwards of hundreds of acres of this land where you're already seeing flooding in this Black neighborhood that already has 66, at least 66% of the pollution of all of the South River in this very condensed area where Black people live, and then nobody's doing anything about. You already have a landfill. The Atlanta prison farm was initially shut down because of how many prisoners died because of the poisoned water. Now you're going to have lead runoff from a shooting range. Like, how bad is this going to be? And then meanwhile, the EPA specifically gave an exemption for this area where 400,000 residents that are about 80% Black live, and this is affecting their water supply. And then What we have is officials that will, you know, make these symbolic stances against something like Jackson, Mississippi or Flint, Michigan, when we see it happening right now. Atlanta, although it has the second longest driver commute, doesn't have nearly the same problems with the air quality as Los Angeles. And that's deeply tied to our tree canopy. And it's being destroyed. This is the largest urban forest in the country that's in this Black neighborhood. And like large parts of it are in this Black neighborhood that's now being replaced for the largest militarized training facility in the country, perhaps the world, for police. Like, how tone deaf could these folks be? And I mean, how much clearer could the indications be that our elected officials are certainly not working for
hours? Matthew, what can folks outside of that area do to support, the protests and the organizations that are working against this? There's some who are saying that this is going to be that it is developing into the next Standing Rock, where, you know, you had people all around the country who were going in support of local residents. We should say again, I mean, and you mentioned this, that this is also land that was essentially stolen from the Muskogee Creek people. So what can folks who are outside, who are watching around the country, what can they do to support your organization and folks who are fighting against Cop City?
Don't worry too much about my organization now. We'll be all right. But there are some things that you should really pay attention to. Please watch the Defend the Atlanta Forest page on Instagram. Watch the Stop Cop City page on Instagram. And watch the Atlanta Solidarity Fund. What we're dealing with right now is what maybe one or two of the folks that were arrested last week got bond, and it was $350,000. And it's because, I mean, this is unconstitutional.
They're trying to keep people out. They're trying to keep people.
They're trying to squeeze it because we've been, you know, supporting folks down here through the Solidarity Fund to make sure that people that are fighting to preserve a livable world don't have too much financial strain on them. And they're essentially trying to bleed the fund. So please donate. If you have the means, if you have influence, use it. This isn't one of those times where folks can sit on the sidelines and watch how things can play out. If you know anybody that has influence, pressure them. Make the calls, and we need folks to show up. We really do. Let's dispel this outside agitator thing that, you know, will always come up in the label of domestic terrorists. These are the same things that were said about Martin Luther King when he was in Chicago and he had his fancy PhD and moved to Alabama. These are the same things that were said about the Freedom Riders when they came to Mississippi. This is the same thing that Al-Assad said in Syria, right, in 2011,
right,
to justify massive killings of people. So don't be scared. We need all the help that we can get. Atlanta is a city filled with, you know, influential folks. Especially, you know, Black folks, people of culture and things. This is not the time to sit on the sidelines and protect your interests. This is not the time to cozy up to high people in high places. It's not okay. We need the support of people that have influence everywhere.
Matthew Johnson from Beloved Community Ministries, thank you so much for your time today. We'll put links to those Instagram accounts and to the Solidarity Fund at majority.fm in our podcast and YouTube descriptions. Thanks again. Really appreciate the
work. Much obliged. Have a good day. Thank you.
Thank you. We are back. Emma Vigeland, Sam Cedar, Majority Report.
I got top billing. I got top billing.
Wow.
It's happening. A coup.
Oh God! Nearly I had cool. No. I did not even. I didn't.
That is. That was.
Do I not do that normally?
That was the culmination of like two plus years of psychological operations.
The Manchurian candidate, Sam.
Wow.
Whoa, what's going on?
I'm blowing
feeling
it now
a little
by...
woozy.
that Havana syndrome kicking
why
in.
Why is there a tin taste to my cup of water? folks, just a reminder, it is your support that makes the show possible. Oh, I should say, before we get there, we have some breaking news. Maybe this is what it was. Until February 12th, you have the opportunity to pre-order based upon an unsurmountable demand. Relentless demand.
Yeah.
The Emma Majority Report shirt back available for pre-order. Get your pre-orders in the next 2 weeks, ladies and gentlemen, or you'll miss out.
Yes.
That is at store.majorityreportradio.com. Store.majorityreportradio.com. Just a reminder, you can support this show by becoming a member.
It's shop.majorityreportradio.com. I'm almost positive. Yeah, I just looked at, it's
shop.majorityreportradio.com. Shop.majorityreportradio.com. There you go. You can also follow us on Instagram, and we probably have a link there. Oh, yeah. We probably should. I'll get a double check on that. Anyways, if you really want to support this program, you can become a member. By becoming a member, you not only allow this show to survive and thrive, you also get the free half, free of commercials, and you get the fun half. So join themajorityreport.com, join themajorityreport.com. And of course, if you go to shop.majorityreportradio.com, you can buy some of our merch. You can become a member of our Discord. It's completely free. Majoritydiscord.com. It's the best community out there. It is. I mean, it is pretty amazing. We 7,000 people, I think we're up to now. And it's a great place to communicate with other listeners of the show, get tips on activism. It's just a great community. Definitely worth checking out. Also, we have an app, majorityapp.com. That is also free. If you're a member, you'll be able to IM the show when we head into the fun half via the app. What else can I tell you? Justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code majority, get 10% off. Emma, what happened on ESVN yesterday?
Well, we did a full breakdown of the conference championship games. Is Mahomes already the GOAT? Bradley and I would argue yes. And just a bunch of other stuff. Is this Eagles team one of the greatest teams ever assembled, top to bottom? And we also spoke a bit about Emmanuel Acho, who I think is an up-and-coming right-leaning influencer in the sports media space, despite seemingly having no fans, still gets boosted by his Fox employers and some of the problematic stuff he has to say. YouTube.com/ESPN show.
Yeah, probably because he flatters their sort of racism.
Probably because his show, Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man, is just validating white people the entire time.
It's actually a more comfortable conversation than you would expect to have with a black man if you're a rich white man.
But you get to feel like it's uncomfortable.
Aren't the black people, aren't they like pretty kind of, aren't they going a little bit overboard with this woke stuff?
Yeah, he had Roger Goodell on and softballed him about Kaepernick. That's his role.
It's wild. Like, a guy like that, as somebody who doesn't follow football, I assume like, oh, he must have done something in the league to have gotten this, and he played like 3 games.
Yeah. No. Amazing. More than Jason Whitlock.
there you go.
Sorry, that was a reference to Crowder's interview. Okay, I'm shutting up.
What's happening on the... Matt, somebody asked, am I sabotaging sales of the Emma Majority Report shirt by giving out the wrong URL? With one hand, I give in top billing, and then the other hand, I taketh away it.
That's.
I guess that. I mean, that would
subterfuge.
Also be, exactly. Matt, what's happening in Matlack Media.
In Matlack Media tonight, Left Reckoning, we've got, well, you never guess what is the last remaining state to still have a COVID emergency. Well, it's Texas, and we're going to be talking about that with David. Also talking about a woman who was working in the Williston Basin in North Dakota school district. Her child got leukemia, and she had to go help that kid get care in Utah. Dad also didn't have a job because his lung collapsed in COVID, and then the school fired the woman. So we talked about American healthcare and shared that GoFundMe. And also we talked about Matt Huber about climate change, the IRA, I think we're calling it instead of the IRA, maybe for historical reasons. And where the climate movement stands. So check that out tonight at 8 o'clock Eastern Time, Left Reckoning YouTube channel.
Is Biden Irish American?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. See you guys in a fun half. 646-257-3920.
You are in for it.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun.
Oh, no. Are you ready?
Oh, yeah. Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back.
Just as delicious as you could imagine.
The alpha males are back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back.
I take all of it to my throat.
Alpha males are back.
Snowflake says what?
The alpha males are back.
You are a madman.
And the alpha males are back.
Oh no, Sam Cedar! What a fucking nightmare!
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Dinner.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough for the breaks.
That's fucking nonsense.
See, white people doing drugs that look worse than normal white people, and all white people look disgusting.
And the alpha males,
psych. Fuck them.
Snowflake says what?
What?
Snowflake says what?
A hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank. Okay. I'm making stupid money. A hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank.
All lives matter.
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back. And the Africans are black African. And the alpha males are black. And the Africans are back.
When you see Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keeping it 100. Can't knock the hustle. Come on! Fuck them.
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday! Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back. Africans are black. Alpha males are black. Africans are back.
Come on.
What?
Come on.
What?
Come on. Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total pussy.